Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
So I've been very keen to catch up with Adam White this morning since the drama of what happened yesterday at the Junction Oval with Victoria and New South Wales. Whitey was calling the action on cricket.com.au. Did a hell of a job too as I was watching it streaming from home. And he came in with a little bounce in his step this morning. Not surprisingly. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning. It was exciting. It was good.
It was exciting.
I probably got a little bit too excited, but that's okay.
I almost
jumped out of the box.
You're in the moment, mate. It was good.
No, it was fantastic because it was a classic example of Victoria actually acting out what they stand for. And Andrew McDonald was in here last week and talked about the sort of saying he's got that he preaches to his players, which is be better for longer. And they were. And I must confess, I didn't think they were going to win, particularly when they were 2 for 150 overnight. And you kind of thought, gee, they only need another 150. They'll get that with 8 wickets in hand on a pretty docile pitch. And even when they were sort of 5 for 217 at lunch, you kind of thought, yeah, they'll still get there. But they took the new ball. They got Enriquez immediately after lunch and then took 4 for 12, I think it was, at the end to win by 25 runs.
I say to you, Adam White, ye of little faith, ye.
Yep.
Ye.
Well, I was just being honest.
How dare you question the mighty Vicks and their capacity with a new... It's a whole thing. It's the new theatre, the new amphitheatre of the Junction Oval. It's the drama, it's the adrenaline that comes in and kicks in with that. Ye of little faith, I say. I know one woman was very, very supportive of the Bush Rangers. I could hear her screaming from her house watching this stream on cricket.com.au. Sherelle McMahon, one of our finest ever athletes. Good morning, Sherelle.
Absolutely. Go the Vicks.
Go the mighty Vicks.
Never in doubt, Whitey. Never in doubt.
Well, I must confess, I was getting over the disappointment that I wasn't activated as the sub. Probably took me at least a day to get over that.
I thought you were a bit stiff there.
Well, I did make my point afterwards. That
just purely
available.
Because you were there.
Purely because I'm very good.
Oh, sorry. Right.
Well, a combination of both.
Right. Yeah.
If you're not there, it's difficult to be activated as well.
But I was told that just because Dan Christian had played 70 first-class games, that he probably just got the nod ahead of me.
Right. Just picked you. Sad.
But it's a good crowd. They had about 4,500 people through the Sheffield Shield match across the 4 days, which I imagine would be the biggest crowd they've had for quite some time.
You would have thought so. There was 2,200 there on the Sunday. So obviously Monday and Tuesday, days 3 and 4 were work days. But even in that last session yesterday, there was quite a few people there. So it was good. And look, as I said through the week, I hope that they still play some games of Sheffield Shield cricket at the MCG so some of the youngsters can experience playing cricket on one of the best cricket grounds in the world. But I think, you know, now that their base is at the Junction Oval and that's where their practice facilities are, both inside and outside, I think they can make that their home as well. So it was good cricket wicket. It changed in complexion throughout the course of the match, so it was much better than what we've seen from the MCG for the last couple of years. So yeah, ticks all around.
Is it a good place to watch the cricket? Do you think?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's going to work well for the Sheffield Shield.
They've kind of done it really well. They've got the old grandstands on one side that have been preserved. They've got the grassy hill on the other. And then they've got the brand new facility and grandstand behind the bowler's arm. So they've got a good thing going down there.
Question off the SMS early doors is probably valid. Who is the bigger mock? You on New South Wales yesterday or me on Crystal Palace? For those that weren't with us yesterday, Crystal Palace were 2-0 up over Manchester United 50 minutes into their clash yesterday. And they had never beaten Manchester United in the Premier League. And was the stat that we came up with yesterday. And lo and behold, 42 minutes later, United have put 3 past them and they win 3-2. I was very, very disappointed for my friends at Crystal Palace.
Yes.
I don't even
know. They were very disappointed in you as well.
Oh, they're blaming me. They're blaming me. But a fair question is raised off the SMS. Well played, early doors.
Before we sort of move on, I know Andrew McDonald is going to join us later on, but you need a bit of luck when you're under the pump, you're starting to struggle a little bit. New South Wales heading for victory. You need things to sort of go your way. And there were 2 consecutive dismissals yesterday that just came from nowhere. Dan Hughes, who made 59, looked absolutely sensational, stood on his stumps.
What did you do that for?
Well, it was a very, very silly thing to do. And then
Percy little bowling heat, was he?
Well, he went
pushed him back.
Yeah, he pushed him back. Stood on his off stump. And then not long after that, five overs later, Curtis Patterson, who had made 53, was run out just out of nowhere. Just inexplicably, Enrique has decided he'd go for a quick single straight to Glenn Maxwell.
And that's not the bloke who would take a single too.
Wouldn't so be taking him on.
They got a bit of luck to get themselves back into the match, and away they went. And Fuzzy took Pfeiffer.
While we are talking football, the women's variety, we have the Algarve Cup in Portugal at the moment. We spoke to the coach of the Matildas, Alan Stajic, last week in preparation to it. We've also now got one of their stars, Alana Kennedy. She's had a big, big 12 months in the world of Matildas football, and she's been good enough to join us from Portugal to say good day. Good morning, Alana.
Hi, it's night time over here, actually.
It would be night time over here.
Good morning to everyone back home, yeah.
Good evening to you for the purpose of this discussion. Now, Algarve Cup, we had a quick chat to Al last week about what it was and the makeup of it. You had three pool games to qualify for the final, and you've just fallen short on goal difference, and you now play off for third against Portugal, who you drew with nil all the other day. What was the mood like yesterday after the game against China? 2-0, you defeated them, but just fell short. What was the mood like not qualifying for the final?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit bittersweet. Obviously, we knew we had to score four goals going in there, but it's hard against a team that we've played. Actually, you know, we've had a few games against them just recently, and I think we still had a lot of positives out of that game, and it's good that we were still able to come away with a win. But yeah, obviously just fell short of by a couple of goals for the final. So I think everyone was a little bit disappointed with that, but happy with the win.
Disappointed and happy with the win, but surely happy with the way the tournament as a whole has played out because of the injuries you went in with and the young athletes who are actually on the field.
Yeah, exactly. We've had a little bit of misfortune with the injuries prior to coming here, and then even we've picked up a few over here, which is unfortunate. But it's great that we have a lot of depth within the squad, even with the young team that we have here. And I think it was a good opportunity for some players to step up and have their moment to shine. So I think everyone's done really well so far.
Four finals series in 5 years, culminating in a drought-breaking premiership, was massive for the club. Huge credit to him. Huge credit to the coaching department, the football department. So on that basis, no surprise, we're going to extend his contract for 3 years out of 2021. Yeah. Put your hands together.
In the old days, they used to call that getting around him. That's what happened there at Richmond. Brendan Gale, the voice you heard there, announcing the three-year contract extension for Damien Hardwick after his premiership success in 2017. No real surprise to see him locked away for a little bit further, but it will make him the longest-serving coach in Richmond history, which is extraordinary when you think about it. And I imagine, Sherelle, looking from the outside, a reward for terrific effort and reward for persistence for Damien Hardwick, and really a no-brainer from where they are at the moment.
I would have thought a no-brainer, and what a response. It was, I'm sure, it was like they'd won the premiership again. I was actually fearful for Damien Hardwick's welfare for a while because it just
they
kept
just
going
him,
on, the,
yeah.
The head rubbing and the... but, you know, I've actually really enjoyed watching Damien Hardwick's growth as a coach across the last couple of years. And I think he's been incredibly honest, particularly with last season and how he had a good look at himself and the way he was approaching things and made some changes there. And I think it's a great lesson for people in that if you can do that quite honestly, the rewards that can actually come your way. And I think him opening himself up and being honest has had a huge impact on that club and the individuals within it. You don't get a response like that when you don't have the players behind you, Whitey.
Absolutely.
It just doesn't happen.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that stands out to me is that he has always been so well respected as a person by his players and by everyone around the club.
Yep.
Everyone really wanted him to do well. And obviously the players want him to do well because that means they're winning games and he's a good coach. And I think what was starting to happen towards the end of the 2016 season, because they obviously didn't have a good year, was that the players still loved him as a person, but there was a few that were starting to question whether he was the coach that was able to take them to the next level. And there's a bit of wavering around that. And we did see Brett Delidio leave and go to the Giants at the end of that season, and a couple of others sort of thought about, do I stay or do I not? But this is just a massive tick and reward for an administration and a board that held their nerve and had belief in someone. And rather than just chuck him out and say, nah, he's not the right person, we'll go and get somebody else, they actually worked around the strengths that Damien Hardwick had and built around his weaknesses to make sure that he got given the best chance of succeeding and the club had the best chance of succeeding. Because I think there's this culture of, oh, we've got to chuck him out and start again, as opposed to just saying, you know what, if we do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, we can work with what we've got, show a bit of loyalty and a bit of belief in somebody. And they got the ultimate success. Now, I don't think anyone at Richmond genuinely thought they could win the premiership at the start of the 2017 season, but they gave themselves a chance at it. And I think that's terrific. And, you know, it has to be said, and Brendan Gale just said before about how, you know, they made finals 4 in 5 years. That's factually correct. But the 3 years they made finals in a row, whatever those years were, 14, 15, 16. But they didn't
win. The Hawks dominated. But they didn't, 3 in a row. Yeah. Premierships.
But they didn't win a final in that time. And they were lacklustre in the finals that they played. So that's where the question marks were around. It wasn't the question of whether Damien could get them to the finals. It's whether they could actually win finals, which made, I think, 2017 so extraordinary, because they won the 3 finals as impressively and as easily as they did. So I think that's the one thing I wanted to mention. And the other thing, Harf, is just around the Dustin Martin thing. We were talking about this yesterday, about how Richmond were able to succeed through that distraction as well, where they didn't genuinely know whether their superstar player was going to stay or go. Now, my understanding is that in August, there's a few at Richmond that thought that he was gone, that he was gone to North Melbourne. And they were able to turn it around by just being a good footy club and playing good footy, but being a good footy club. And he stayed for less because he wanted to be with his teammates and he wanted to be at that club. And Richmond, again, held their nerve. They had a figure they were prepared to pay. They weren't going to go and match whatever North Melbourne were prepared to offer, and they backed in their culture. So huge ticks for Richmond, and you know they've turned around that football club.
So whilst it was a win yesterday for Damien Hardwick and Mrs. Hardwick as well, with a 3-year extension and the Hardwick kids, it was a win for stability and focus on. Oh, I was going to say focus on footy. That was the other group.
They were the clear instigators of the success.
Yes, agitators to make sure that things got done. A win for a little bit of board courage, which we don't often see.
Yes,
where normally the coach is the first person to leave the building when things aren't going well. It's because it's the easy option. But Richmond decided that wasn't the path they were going to tread, and they've got due reward for it.
I think you make a really good point there about courage. Sometimes people think courage is change. Sometimes courage is actually sticking fat and understanding and identifying what the problems are and actually being able to fix them, as opposed to just throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yep.
And won't it be so interesting to see how Richmond respond this season? We've already heard a little bit from Jack Revolt talking about, you know, everyone's feeling great at the start of the preseason. You get a bit of a sense of things. We saw the Bulldogs last year not respond so well the year after their drought-breaking premiership. So that, for me, will be a real key for them, the ability to keep everyone focused. You know, when you haven't had success as a club for so long, that drive is absolutely there and it's inbuilt, and you wonder whether that drive continues to be there the following year. And it is a real challenge for this club, and we'll...
You're almost getting a bit emotional.
Sorry, I'm actually... Getting a bit dragged up, no. But it will be really interesting to see if they can find that drive that won't be there in the same way this year that it was last year.
No, it's like an impossible dream what they're able to achieve, and it'll continue in that first game on the Thursday night where they'll unfurl their premiership flag, and there's a suggestion there could be 100,000 people in a home and away game. Because
Well, there will be, let's be honest. You can't say it won't happen
after the amount of spectators that went to that preliminary final against the Giants.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, and the fever-pitched reaction, too, to the premiership. And it's still going for half the Richmond supporter base that I've come across.
Yeah, anyway. And it's not
They're
even
still
just
in September mode. It's amazing.
And it's not even the Richmond supporter base. I mean, I know a lot of people love to hate Richmond, too, but there was... just a romance for me around what they were able to do last year. But it will be a test for this culture that we've been talking about, for the things that have been put in place, the structures that have been put around that coaching group. It will be a real test for that as to whether they can back up well this year.
Well, they might be able to back up well with the acquisition of key personnel just to strengthen them again. Now, we read Johnny Ralph's piece in the Herald Sun today in regards to the sights that have been set on Tom Lynch, the captain of the Gold Coast, who comes out of contract at the end of this season. Similar to the Dustin Martin situation, there'll be talk about this for the entire year. And Damien Hardwick was doing a Fox Footy interview, and Ralphie's got some quotes from that saying, "You're actually allowed to do this. We do talk to players that are out of contract. It's an uncomfortable situation because I'm talking to opposition players and opposition clubs are talking to my players. It's probably not a great look for our game." He goes on to talk about why he would be such a great acquisition, which I think we all know. But Shirelle, you, as a footy fan, are you comfortable that clubs are out there speaking to players who are in contract but coming out of contract? Or would you prefer, and it's public, or would you prefer it to be done under the cover of darkness, that nobody really knows what's going on, but they all know what's going on?
Well, I don't like the cloak and dagger sort of things. I much prefer when people are a bit more honest. But it doesn't sit that well with me when, you know, if it's one of the teams I'm supporting and I know that players are out there having a sniff around for a better option. I don't love that, but that's the loyal streak in me coming out probably. I've always played my sport in that way and responded well with people who have that same loyal streak as me. So I don't love it, but I also acknowledge that it's just part of where this sport is at.
Are there any other solutions, Whitey, to the way this has to happen now, where there does seem to have to be the ability for clubs to speak to contracted players who are coming out of contract? Because that little window at the end of the season, it's not long enough to get deals done, for these type of deals anyway.
I don't think there. I just think transparency needs to come into play here, and there needs to be more honesty about people meeting with other clubs, because it's just going to happen. And I think
what happens anyway.
Yes, but the more it's done in a transparent fashion, the more likely that we'll start to accept it as just it happens. You know what I mean? Like, rather than that happened, did it? So unless they come up with an idea that say July is a window that you can go and speak to players, So that's the month. But then that'll cause a distraction to the season playing out. So look, short answer is no, I don't think there is. But the Tom Lynch thing, that's legitimate, Ralphie talking about that. That they are one or two, maybe three clubs that are leading the race, so to speak, in getting Tom Lynch's services next year should he leave. I don't know how they fit him in the cap. I mean, the only way they can do it really is a back-ended contract, because they've got four marquee players on big money.
I wonder if we'll get a Lin Yong situation where you'll tour Punt Road facilities at night and someone will catch him in the hallway. We'll see. It's certainly going to be a talking point through the year, but well done to Dimmer. Well done to the Tigers. They deserve the success and they deserve to have a coach extended for 3 more years because he's doing a hell of a job with that group. And I'm sure the players are very, very pleased, as we heard from that audio before. Nathan Jones will be. They're always out there training in the sunshine, these AFL boys, and he's getting ready for a game tomorrow night in the JLT Community Series against St Kilda at Casey Fields. 7:05 is the bounce down of the ball. He's been a good man to us through the last little while, Nathan Jones, the co-captain of the D's, and he's back for 2018. G'day, Jonesy.
G'day, Alf. How you going?
Going very well, thank you. Appreciate your time this morning. The game tomorrow, firstly, can I take you back a bit? To the game against North Melbourne down in Tassie. What did you make of the performance of the D's in that match?
Yeah, I think we got out of it what we intended, mate. It was obviously the first hit out playing competitively against an opposition, so the boys are always pretty keen after a long pre-season to get out there and play. You know, obviously an opposition, any side that sort of fielded is exciting, and I guess in that regard to test yourself and what you've been practicing. So I think they put a pretty strong side out there, and as did we. I think that's sort of a byproduct of the AFLX this year, and teams only having a couple of games to prepare. But I felt like we executed some of the sort of fundamental things we practiced all pre-season, and we obviously now look forward to tomorrow night to sort of refine that and tune that up, ready for round one.
Two games in the pre-season. How do you feel about that? Is it for someone that has played footy for a long time and there's been so many variations to the pre-season. How does this one sit with you?
It doesn't worry me too much, Whitey, personally. I think, I guess my intention, having a bit of an injury interrupt the pre-season, my goal the whole time along was to try and get two games in. You know, the first game is generally a little bit more managed in terms of, you know, time on field and load and that kind of thing. But, to have a full hit out tomorrow night sort of sets you up with a game and a half, game and three quarters to be 100% ready for round one is sort of my personal preference. I think it doesn't faze, the players too much, to be honest. But I think from a spectacle point of view, the fact that most teams have fielded pretty strong sides in both practice games has made for, better viewing and obviously a better quality series. And, hopefully that leads to, an even better start to round one with teams, really well tuned up.
Nathan, when you reflect on last season and the close loss that meant you missed out on the finals, is that something that has played a part in your preparation for this season, or have you totally put that aside and are just looking forward?
It was definitely addressed early days. Obviously, the day we came back from our break, sort of Goody put it on the table and made it pretty clear that, obviously what happened was not acceptable, and that's a byproduct of, the inconsistencies we had during the season. But basically it was, we don't want to look too much into the past. We want to look into the future and the ways we're going to be able to, continue to get better and grow as a team from that experience. And I think that's been really the focus. I think in the back of most players' minds that played in it, it sort of, it burns away there. But as far as it being, a theme or anything like that or regularly mentioned, it's, we've really looked forward and, worked and refined on the ways that we're going to make us a better team so we don't find ourselves in that position again.
Nathan, when you say Goody puts it on the table, is it something that you have this sort of almost like a round table discussion as to what went wrong and what needs to go right moving forward? Or is it more Goody saying, right, this is what you need to do? How was it addressed? Because I think it's been really refreshing how honest all of you have been publicly about saying, we were really disappointed with what happened at the end of last year and we want to make sure it doesn't happen again. Was that the sort of thing that happened internally as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was, with all the sort of opinion outside the footy club, it's easy to probably get wrapped up in that Collingwood result. But I guess particularly being a more senior player and obviously the guys that are more mature and experienced around the club sort of look at the season as a whole. And there was a multitude of reasons why we didn't make the eight in the end, and obviously it all culminated in that loss to Collingwood at the end of the year. But there was results during the year that we could have controlled through inconsistencies in our performances and our preparation, which has really driven the themes for the summer, which is sort of the way Goody put it. We have to get better and more reliable with our behaviours and our standards off field and with our training and preparation and obviously still refine our game plan and our style of play and these kind of things. And ultimately, as we mature and grow and particularly our younger, less experienced players gain that experience and understanding, we'll continue to improve as a footy club. But it was all about, heading in the direction of improving and continuing to try and get better as a team rather than sort of wallow in, the disappointment of missing out.
Because, I don't want to put words in your own mouth, but even what Goody said to us late last year, it was sort of like you got those injuries to key players, including yourself, all at about the same time, and you kind of were never able to sort of balance up and play the footy in the back half of the year that you played in the front half. Now with everybody fit and firing, do you feel that it's a different place and you're getting back to that first half of last year a bit?
Oh, for sure. I think obviously that has a huge bearing on, results and obviously the influence within your team during the year when you miss a significant amount of games to key players. But that wasn't necessarily something we could control, Obviously we didn't plan on Maxi sort of tearing his hammy and me tearing my quaddy and Jack hurting his foot. But these things happen within a season, and that's the challenge for us, is to continue to create and build depth as a footy club, which I think we've done, and I've seen over this pre-season, a handful of guys really take that next step in terms of, you know, driving their own performances, but also driving the consistency of the team, which is an exciting thing for the footy club, and hopefully that leads us to performing to the level and the expectation that we're hoping for this year.
Friday night, Sydney and the GWS Giants play against each other in preparation for the AFL season, the last week of the JLT Community Series in Blacktown. Now, my understanding is they've spent a fair bit of time together, these two clubs, in recent weeks. Tom Papley from the Sydney Swans might know a bit more about that than I do. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Great to have you on. Now, have you played the Giants a couple of times already, had some scratch match hitouts with them a couple of times already before this clash on Friday night?
We just had the one. We instead of doing an intra-club, well, we did a few intra-clubs during the pre-season, but we had a main one down at Henson Park just against each other, just to sort of get some competitive, just instead of playing against yourself, which was a good idea, I thought, with the start we had last year, and they sort of agreed, I suppose, and yeah, it was a good hit-out.
I agree with you 100%, just by the way, after months of just playing against yourselves and knowing what everyone's going to be doing in certain situations, at this stage of the year, you want a bit of competition to work out whether or not your plans work. So an opposition is absolutely the way to go. Is this a new thing for the Sydney Swans and the Giants, or has this been happening for the last couple of years?
No, it's the first year we've done it. So, yeah, it's, we booked some things and then we worked on it last week, and I think it was a result for us.
So how much are you holding back when you're playing these little scratch matches? Because obviously you don't want to give too much away before the season, and you take them on a couple of times through the year. How much do you hold back in these little scratchies?
The JLT, I suppose. You want to just get everything, your preparation for the season, I suppose. You want to, everything that you've been working on, you want to try to put it in place, and if they didn't work, you look at it and just keep working on it throughout the year. Everything's not going to go to plan during the season, so you just take it week by week and keep working on the things that you need to work on.
From a personal point of view, the last couple of pre-seasons for you have been a bit interrupted with injury. How's that panned out for you this season?
Yeah, this year I've done a lot more pre-season, which is good for me, and I'm really excited about having done a full pre-season. I had a bit of a knee off at the end of last year, but been back in there for a good 2 months now, and probably the fittest I've been so far, so I'm looking forward to the season.
When you think about last year and the last couple of years, really, with the amount of goals you've been able to score, you were second on the goal-kicking list to Buddy last year. When you have an athlete like him in the team who was kind of showing you the way in some respects, how much do you take out of that and the way he goes about things?
Oh, I think he's one of the best players in the league, and I think everyone knows that. And it's just the things he says in a forward meeting or a team meeting, when he speaks, everyone's listening, and because he's got so much experience in the game. And I think whenever he speaks, everyone's listening, and it's always something good that he's going to say.
And by the look of things, he's ready to go because he kicked 4 goals on the weekend, playing in the pre-season, which is always a good sign, and looking fantastic.
Yeah, he is. He's moving really well at the moment. He's up and firing, and it's always good to get a few goals on the board early in the season. And, yeah, hopefully you can push that to round one.
It appears from the outside that you've got more of a focus to make sure you start this season well. You had a fairly strong team out for the game last weekend. You played well. They're a bit more of an edge to you to start the year. Is that a fair observation?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it probably is, yeah. We put in a fairly strong side against the Lions, and I'm not sure about this week, but I'm sure we'll probably put in another strong side. But I think it's just taken week by week. So this week we'll focus on the Giants. We won't focus on round one, just focus on the Giants this week, and then have a week off. And then when it comes to round one, we'll certainly be zeroing in on round one.
It was one of the real talking points through last year about the fact that you were 0-6. And when we were talking to your teammates last year, everyone was sort of a bit in a quandary as to what took place. What have you learnt? Now you're getting ready for a new season. What have you learnt to make sure that you don't replicate again this year at the start?
Well, I think if you're not on your game every week, anyone can beat you. I suppose it's just about you got to play your best every single week. Otherwise, anyone's going to beat you. I think in the final, Geelong, they smashed us in the final, and then we weren't on our game, and that's what can happen. And then anyone from the bottom of the ladder to the top of the ladder can beat you on any given day. So it's just about bringing your best every single week, and that's what we've got to work on.
Tom, you've got a strong family connection at the club, obviously, with both of your grandfathers playing there. And I see that you're going to have a change of number. One of your grandfather's numbers you're going to have on your back next year, Max Papley. Was that a tough decision on which number to go for, which grandfather to choose?
Jeff, mum's dad, was actually 24, so I can't really take that off Rampy. But,
no, fair enough.
The number 11... Obviously, Jeremy Lather retired at the end of the year, so I thought it was a good opportunity to make a bit of family history. And, hopefully I can wear the number with pride and have a good career in it.
Well, you've had a pretty good career so far. You burst onto the scene last year and you've played 20 games in both of your seasons with the Swans. When you first started, could you have believed that this is where you'd be 2 years in, that you would have played 40 games, you would have played in a grand final and been a really key component of the Sydney Swans outfit when you got drafted?
Definitely not, to be honest. You sort of pinch yourself a little bit sometimes when you played in the grand final as well, and I'll never forget that. But you just got to go day by day, and anything can happen in AFL with injuries or anything else, anything like that. So you just want to take it day by day and just keep working hard at things that you need to work hard on, and the things will keep coming for me, hopefully.
Footy can be an all-consuming pastime or career for players these days. Do you have anything outside of footy that keeps you balanced, or are you all footy at the moment?
No, I enjoy my golf. Played a bit of golf yesterday. I like to play a bit of golf on my days off, so play a bit of golf, and then also got a little tinny that I go out fishing in as well. So a few boys, we like a bit of golf and fishing, so it's good.
Just out on Sydney Harbour, or...?
Yeah. No, yeah, just around the harbour and stuff. Yeah.
What's the handicap, Tom?
Around probably 16, I reckon, around that mark.
Is there a tour? Back in my day, Tom, we had a little tour that would go from the club. We'd play two groups would play every week and have a little PGA tour style situation. Have you got a formal sort of setup, or are you just random blokes just play every week?
I suppose we got the sort of core group of players that play most weeks, but no, we just play sort of against ourselves, getting teams of two, or play our own bowl and see who wins the hole, and that's a little comp we have going, but we don't have anything like that. But that's a good idea. I don't mind that idea.
Yeah, you take it back to take it back to the boys.
I'm happy to cough it up. That's okay. Bert van Marwijk got his first crack at the Socceroos squad, and it's got a lot of people talking about what it might mean going forward. Adam Peacock is one of those. He's the very handsome host of Fox 4 Sports football coverage. Does a hell of a job, and he's been good enough to join us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Adam.
I've stopped those payments, Harf, but you still continue with the praise. It's wonderful.
You're a great man doing great things on Fox Sports, and it's terrific to have you as part of our program this morning, and particularly talking Socceroos. We've got preliminary games against Norway and Colombia coming up not too far away. And an interesting squad yesterday with some bolters. Tell us about the bolters, please, Mr. Peacock.
Yeah, Andrew Naboot can be qualified as a bit of a bolter because he's never played for the Socceroos before, and Demi Petrados. They've been doing great things for Newcastle. So if you're watching the A-League week in, week out, you probably think, yeah, that's not totally out of left field. There's a young guy, he's a defender, he's from Perth, but he's played in Lithuania, Romania, Serbia, and he's currently playing in Czech Republic. Alex Sumcha, big, tall, 6'3" defender. He's the bolter. He's like, whoa. He was in the Oli Roos squad not that long ago, the under-23 squad that played a tournament in January. But, he's, I don't know where he's plucked him from. But, in he comes to the squad, which will be trimmed next week. They'll probably trim four or five players, but they want these players to get through the weekend and be okay.
Have we ever had two players come from Millwall for the Socceroos?
Well, Tim and Lucas Neal, maybe, back in the day.
Ah,
they were at Millwall.
Maybe.
But when they were very young men, and I'm not sure Tim played too much
for the Socceroos when he was still at Millwall. I think he'd moved to Everton around the time he started playing for the Socceroos. But, yeah, James Meredith is the other guy. Tim's, well, he's at Millwall. He's not playing much, but James Meredith is a left-back, and he was in the squad about 2 years ago under Ange. And, yeah, another left-back option. We've got a few of those. There's his Bates, Melbourne boy. He's in there. Alex Gersbach as well. So that position of the field we're okay with. It's up front, but we've got a dearth of depth.
Tell us more about the inclusion of Tim Cahill. Obviously, he's been over in Millwall, not getting a lot of time, as you said. Is his inclusion a surprise, or is it just going on the experience that he's had and what he brings to the team? Or is that a bit of an indication of the talent pool that we've got to select from, that someone like him is continuing to be put into a squad like this?
I think mainly B and C there, Sherelle, the last two that you mentioned. It's not so much of a surprise. I reckon he had to be there. I don't care if he doesn't play again for Millwall this season. If he's over just doing sightseeing tours in London, he needs to go to the World Cup for our point of view, because he can do it on the big stage, and he doesn't need too much football. He needs a bit of football. He needs a bit more than he's getting at the moment, but he doesn't need too much, because you don't want the old 38-year-old creaking bones getting to a World Cup in not good shape. He needs that freshen up. He hasn't played a lot of football since the Syria match, so he needs a little bit more. But no, you had to have him there, because we haven't got four players around the world scoring 20 goals a season in European leagues or here in the A-League from Australia. We need a guy like Tim Cahill at the World Cup.
Obviously, Bert is new to the game when it comes to the Socceroos. So I want to know, Adam, who selects the squad? Has he got a selection panel, and is that new as well since Ange has left? Or who's putting together the squad?
Yeah, Adam, I'd say Bert would have the overriding say, but Ante Milicic, I think, for one, that Sunchar, the extreme bolter, he would have been, Bert would have said to Ante Milicic, is there any kids coming through that you think are maybe up to it? And because Ante Milicic has worked with the under-23 squad, he's the coach of that team, and he's the assistant of the Socceroos, he would have gone, yeah, him. So there would have been a little bit of collaboration, but I think Bert would have done some intense research since the FFA touched base in the middle of January. Since then, he would have been watching a lot of the A-League, and they've got this program where you can just basically open up your laptop, type in the player, and you can find his club, and you can find his last whatever games he's played, every game he's played on this database that they've got. So, yeah, he would have seen everything, and he would have made the final judgment, the overriding judgment, but he would have taken some intel from other people.
And there's a lot of talk through Ange Postecoglou's reign as the coach about the style of play that the Socceroos were putting out there and the way they were going about things. Does this squad give an indication on some of the changes we might see in that regard from Bert?
Not really, because the Honduras squad, I think just about everyone who was involved in that squad, the 23 involved in that squad, is in this squad. So I think maybe he might reshape things how he wants to play, indications are, but the personnel he's going to use are the same, which is a good thing. I mean, these are the guys that got us to a World Cup, albeit by the milk run, but we're here, we're there, and we don't have... It's not like there's 20 guys who totally deserve a run have been left out of this squad. We just don't have that depth, unfortunately. I mean, Brandon Perrello, I'd say, from Brisbane Roar, or ex-Brisbane Roar now at Kaiserslautern in Germany, he's the most unlucky. I reckon he's stiff, but the rest, there's not many you can say, oh, yeah, he should be in there. It's a disgrace that he's not there. Daniel Arzani, a lot of people making noise about him, but, yeah, I think he's a little bit short at the moment. And if he can improve the way he's been improving throughout this season, double down on that, he might not be far away from the World Cup squad.
Speaking of the World Cup squad, the 2010 World Cup squad had a late admission with Brad Jones leaving the squad to be with his gravely ill son at the time. He's back in this squad after 18 months. I mean, that's a real feel-good story, I imagine, for the Socceroos camp leading into these games.
Yeah, the guy was so unlucky in 2010, obviously, and he had to do what he had to do. I mean, goodness, his son ended up passing away, and that was a horrible story. But, it's a nice little turnaround. He's been playing in Feyenoord in Holland the last couple of years. He was on the books of Liverpool once upon a time and played a few games in the Premier League. But he had a really good season last season. This season he hasn't been quite up to the standard, but Bert van Marwijk was the ex-manager of Feyenoord. He's obviously got a lot of contacts at the club and watches a fair bit of his old club as well on television, and Brad Jones has been playing week in, week out for finals. So he's one of the four keepers, along with Danny Vukovic, Matt Ryan, and Mitch Langerak, ex-Melbourne Victory, who's now over in Nagoya, and he's selected in the J-League Team of the Week last week. So he's got off and running in Japan, which is good to see for Mitch. So goalkeeper, we don't have an issue in terms of depth. We've got many choices.
Two games coming up, March 24 in Oslo against Norway, and then four days later in London against Colombia for the Socceroos. The squad will be trimmed before that, but that's a lot of the squad. The midfield depth's pretty good. I'm happy with that. Brillante, Irvine, Jednak, Luongo, Milligan and Moy sounds like a pretty good midfield division, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's good that a guy like Josh Brillante gets rewarded for his good performance. He's been a little bit up and down the last 6 weeks, to be totally honest, but he's been very good over the last 18 months as a whole, so... Yeah, he deserves it. But, yeah, again, we've got a stack of options there. Milo Jedinak's playing and playing regularly for Aston Villa. I'm playing well, I'm told, as well. So that's a good sign, because going in, we need him. And Aaron Moy, it's actually, he got that really nasty cut a couple of weeks ago on his knee. He hasn't come back yet. That, for Australia, is the biggest blessing we could have received, because Aaron Moy got to the Confederations Cup last year after playing, like, 60 games almost, and he was cooked. He was gone. He couldn't run physically. He was just not there. But this little freshen up, 2-3 week freshen up at this stage of the season, that'd be perfect for us.
Bowls and Neville advances. He stopped and Victoria wins. What a victory to Victoria. 4 late wickets with Fawad Ahmed, the star, with 5 wickets in the second innings.
Gee, there was some energy at the Junction Oval in the coach's box, I imagine, and the commentary box, certainly, from that little grab from Adam White on cricket.com.au, as the Bush Rangers found themselves in a fantastic position in the end. They won the game. They had 8 wickets to get with about 150 to defend at the start of play yesterday. Some suggested they couldn't do it. I wonder what the coach was thinking as he got to the ground yesterday. Andrew McDonald is that man, and he joins us again on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Macca.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're going very well, thanks. What were you thinking when you got in the car park yesterday in the preparation for the day's play?
Pretty similar to any other day. We knew that if we could turn up and execute our plans and what we wanted to achieve, that we'd be in the contest. The game was ebbing and flowing. No one really took full control of the game at any stage. It was always in the balance. So it was one of those contests that the trend was set early in the game. There was a lot of wickets. But also, the game was just tight the whole way through. So we always had belief, but the belief was going to come through how we execute our plans. And I thought the guys, whoever was there yesterday morning to witness the bowling group, I thought they bowled incredibly well and executed exactly what we wanted to do.
Did you have any concerns that perhaps the wicket wouldn't enhance the prospects for your bowlers? That it wasn't doing enough on day three, that perhaps day four was going to be a real hard grind and it would have been difficult either way?
Yeah, I think it was difficult for batting as well as bowling. As a batsman, you never really got any flow to your innings and you weren't able to sort of take control of the bowling. So I knew the game was never going to get away from us quickly. Did we have a concern about the wicket not playing enough six? Yeah, definitely. We thought it was going to go a little bit up and down late day three. It didn't do that. They applied themselves well. Patterson and Hughes played extremely well on night three. And look, if they played well the next morning, they may have been able to take the game away from us, but they didn't. We got a bit of luck, a fortuitous wicket, a hit wicket with Hughes stepping on his stumps. And then as the game went on, Farwood started to get a little bit of spin, and there was a little bit up and down in the surface. So things sort of started to come back our way, and I suppose that created a little bit of belief in the ability to win the game, which ended up unfolding.
Things started to turn around your way, but that's been happening really for the last few weeks at least. Coming from the bottom of the ladder, what do you see as the change in what's happened with the team? Because now you're absolutely in a great position to push for that fourth straight title.
Yeah, there's not been a lot of change, to be honest, but the way we've planned and prepared has been very similar. Look, the results, sometimes people look at results and they say that the team is operating better or functioning better, or there's a better feel around the group. We played some really good cricket pre-Christmas. We have a lot of draws, but the surfaces were quite benign, and we weren't able to, we had games in really good positions, but just weren't able to get over the line. And when you're having draws, you start to slip away in terms of the points table. And we found ourselves on the bottom of the table with no wins up until Christmas. We had 1 loss and 4 draws. And now we've been able to post-Christmas win 3 games and have 1 draw, which has seen us climb up pretty quickly. And the season's concerned and around very quickly in Sheffield Shield cricket with only 6 teams in the competition.
2 players I want to focus on for the moment, Andrew. One is Travis Dean and the other is Marcus Harris. 2 of your younger players who open the batting and offer so many different things with the way they play. But Marcus Harris's first innings was incredible to score as many of the runs as he did. I think it was 106 of 160 before he was dismissed in difficult batting conditions. And then Travis Dean, the guts and determination he showed to bat for as long as he did, considering he had to bat through the Will Pekowski hit, the crashing of wickets early on. Two very different innings from two very different batsmen, but both very effective.
Yeah, very effective. As you said, Marcus Harris on day one was an absolutely incredible innings. I think he was probably, well, in a sense that he had Stephen O'Keefe was spinning the ball into him, whereas the rest of the batting unit had the ball spinning away. But his scoring rate and the way he just played with such ease on a wicket where everyone else was finding it quite difficult was the way we know Marcus Harris can play. And look, he sometimes plays a level above shield cricket and, you know, looks a class act, and hopefully he can, you know, put some really big scores on the board and potentially go onto that international stage, you know, in a bit of time. But and Travis Dean, we know what he can do. He had a poor start of the season. He just applied his method, really simply put. He dug in. He was hard to remove, and he gave us some substance in terms of the score that we had to defend. So he's finishing off the season strong. He played a, you know, great innings at the WACA also. So he's got 200 in two games. The WACA innings was totally different to this one. He played the situation of games really, really well. They're both getting, in terms of experience, they're starting to mature in terms of reading situations of games as well. A fantastic opening combination, and we made that decision at the start of last year, a tough call around another senior player to pair those two up, knowing that potentially they're going to be 10-year opening combination for Victoria, and so far they've done a fantastic job.
Yeah, they're great situational players, both being good in different situations, which makes them a good combination. Now, we'll talk about Farwood shortly, but I did want to ask you about Scott Boland, because Farwood's getting all the credit for what he did, and so he should. But Scott Boland, for the match, 34 overs, 2 for 52. 34 overs for just 52 runs.
Yeah, he was incredible. And I spoke to him post-match yesterday around how the game sometimes tests you. He didn't bowl that well in Adelaide and picked up 8 wickets. And I thought he bowled as well as I've ever seen him bowl in my time as a coach here. And he's only picked up 2 wickets for the game. But he controlled the tempo. He allowed Farwood to do what he did. And we always talk around bowling in partnerships and bowling as a unit, and that's what Scotty Boland did. He played his role absolutely magnificently and allowed Farwood down the other end to wheel away and you know, create havoc from the other end. But if he lacked control that top end throughout both innings, then you know, the attack wouldn't have functioned the way it did. And I'm glad you guys recognise that, and it's a great observation, and full credit to Scotty Boland for the game he had.
The Farwood Ahmed factor, we were listening to the story yesterday from Finchie post-game maker about missing out on the Perth game and then getting the MCG and bowling 700 deliveries just to stay sharp. It was reward for effort yesterday, I suppose, because his ability to finish off the game for the Vicks was obviously critical, but it must have been pleasing to see that, from a coaching perspective, someone who missed out on a chance to play because it wasn't going to suit him over there in Perth didn't take it as a negative, just got back to work and now got the reward.
Oh, he's so even, Farwood. He just loves bowling, and that's what he does. If he misses out on a match, as you said, he goes to the MCG and bowls what he would have bowled in the game, plus more. And, he just got an incredible skill set, and we know what he can do. And what he dished up yesterday was, you know, what we needed at that time. And, he deals with disappointment pretty well, Fuzz, and, you know, that allows him to bounce back as quickly as he can. So missing out on Perth, as you said, the surface over there wasn't suiting him, so he didn't take him across there. He stayed back here, prepared, knowing that the Junction Oval would potentially suit him, prepared himself, and you know, he's a consummate professional. And what he did yesterday is really set up the season for us. It was, you know, the loser pretty much went home from that game, and you know, we're on the right side of it, and we can thank Fuzz for that.
That was great. What do you do as a coach? Can you control anything in that situation as a coach? We often talk about the level of impact the coach can have in those moments. What did you do, and what could you do with that situation?
No, very little. You do a lot of the planning going into the game. In four-day cricket, you get the opportunity pre-match, lunchtime and at tea time to reassess your tactical stuff and where players are at. But once essentially they're out there, then it's over to them. All the information is given to the captain from the coaching staff or individually to each player as to what we need them to do. And you just hope that goes well to plan A, and then you've probably got a plan B. And sometimes yesterday, since you just went through his own plan and you know just read the game beautifully, and if anyone's there to see some of the moves that he made in terms of bowling changes, he pretty much got everything right, and we needed that, and it was an outstanding captain's performance. So yeah, we pretty much did that. Like Whitey did yesterday, probably don't talk as much as what Whitey did, but enjoy the game.
28 days, 12 hours and 33 minutes until the 2018 Commonwealth Games kick off on the Gold Coast, and I reckon the countdown is certainly on for Lauren Wells, who's qualified for the 400 hurdles, the long jump, and the 4x4. She's got a busy campaign. She's joining us on the Breakfast Club to tell us all about it. Lauren, good morning.
Good morning. How are you all?
We are very, very well, thank you. Appreciate your time. Now, many of our listeners might know you as Lauren Wells, but Lauren Bowden we know very, very well through your athletics career. So that's something that our listeners need to be aware of. But how are you feeling leading into the Comm Games? Obviously, you're pretty good, Nick, to qualify for the hurdles, the long jump, and the 4x4. You must be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I've just come off the back of winning my 11th national title for the 400 hurdles. So that was really exciting, and managed to get myself on the podium for the long jump as well, which means I am now an all-round track and field athlete, which is cool.
Nice work. Good stuff. The 11th national title in the 400 hurdles is a fabulous achievement. You finished fourth, I think, in a couple of Commonwealth Games. Yeah. Considering the field that will be out there this time around, can you get on the podium?
Well, I mean, that's always the aim, but I think as I get better in the 400 hurdles, it seems like the world also gets better. looking at the depth, potentially, of the women that are coming across, you know, within the Commonwealth, we've got, you know, world championship medalists, Olympic finalists that could potentially be coming. So at this point, of course, I would love to be on that podium. But for me, it's always about going out on the track, executing a race and running a great time. So if I come away with a PB, then that will be my gold medal. So after that, what will be, but yeah, it could be probably the deepest Commonwealth Games in terms of talent that I've ever competed in.
Well, you talk about being an all-round track and field athlete, but is there some challenges with the programming at the Comm Games with the long jump and the 400 hurdles? Are they scheduled for a similar time?
Yes. At this point, the finals of the 400 hurdles and the long jump are only 5 minutes apart.
That could make it tough, no?
Yes, that would be a very tough ask. I did test this out at the Nationals recently, where I came off the track after my 400 hurdle final, went straight back into the call room and back out on the track for the long jump. But I had an hour 20 gap with that. So I know that I can do it and I can jump well. But I think 5 minutes might be a little bit too much. So, you know, we're going through the process of trying to get the program changed, but obviously that's quite difficult. It's not just a local meet, it's the Commonwealth Games. So I'm very thankful to the officials at Athletics Australia who are pursuing this for me. And, yeah, look, an hour would certainly be more than enough. So if that change could happen, that would be amazing.
And 400 hurdles for me, I actually used to run a 400 hurdles. It's a bloody tough event to run. Why would you choose to do that?
Well, it is a good question, and I often wonder that when I'm very tired after most sessions. But I don't know, call me crazy or weird, but I do actually enjoy it. I really, really do love it. And I think I'm the type of person that really loves a challenge, and it's almost easier in a way running with hurdles because you've got these barriers every 35 metres as checkpoints. So you're not really thinking about the distance in the race that you've covered. You're kind of thinking, what steps am I doing? What leg do I jump over? And you've kind of got a race plan really set in your mind, and it's a very individual race. So I think that really suits my personality, and I love that challenge. But that's the difference that I also love between doing the hurdles and the long jump, because I find the hurdles quite mentally draining, I guess, because you do have to think precisely where your feet go. And whilst you're doing the long jump as well, I can literally stand at the end of that runway, I can get the crowd involved, you get 3 attempts at least, and I can really just soak up the atmosphere. So for me, it's a very different mindset, I guess, and I really enjoy that as well.
And it is an extraordinary thing, 400-metre hurdles and long jump. You think of it, it's got to be a sprinter and a long jumper, Carl Lewis style. Lauren, just finally, going in and participating in the Commonwealth Games at home, is that something that is more pressure and harder to do well because you are at home and the spotlight's on you, or is it better because you are in your home conditions and that's seen as an advantage?
Yeah, I think that challenge is probably quite an individual one. I'm lucky enough that this is actually my second home game. When I was 17, I managed to qualify for the Commonwealth Games that were held in Melbourne. And to this day, it still stands in my mind as one of the most amazing competitions and events I've ever been part of. And I think that was because it was a home games and it was just really special. And now thinking, you know, ahead to the Gold Coast, that's probably what really kept me in the sport after the Rio Olympics. Just that allure of the home games again and knowing how amazing that crowd support is. And I think just having that opportunity now that I guess I'm a more experienced athlete than I was when I was 17 and really drawing on all these years of experience. And it's not something people get to experience very often. So I think that pressure, you know, is what you make of it.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.